Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. This is our Hoops HD report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by John Titel over here, John Stalica, and we lost his video up.
I'm here. Do not keep me in the dark. Do not keep me in the dark. I'm here.
David Griggs joining us as well. Whether that's fortunate or unfortunate, we'll find out. You disappeared again.
Yeah, I'm trying to fix the television.
Well, that being said, this is our Hoops HD report where we talk about all things going on in the major conferences, top 25 teams and the like. And we're going to start off, before we get into what's been going on the court, I wanted to start with a little bit of discussion about what's been going on in the city of Memphis. For those of you that have been living under a rock and missed the news.
Big win against UIC, 2-0. Why do you want to start there?
David, no. We're starting with what happened in the courtroom in Memphis, in a very interesting scenario here where the NCAA, after Memphis had played their first game this season already, if I'm correct.
Yeah, they had.
And had already ruled back in May that James Wiseman was eligible to play this season, suddenly said, oh, wait, he's not eligible to play. Now, David, I know you're a little bit familiar with some of the NCAA rules here. Just because the NCAA says somebody is not eligible to play – has an eligibility problem, that doesn't keep him off the court. The school can keep playing him, but they just run the risk that all the games will be forfeited. Am I correct?
For the most part, yeah. It was a little bit of a bizarre situation. I guess back in 2017, Penny Hardaway, current coach of Memphis, then a coach of a high school coach in Memphis, had paid to move him across the country, and the expenses were $11,000. Now, I don't know if he had their home airlifted from Nashville to Memphis. That seems like an awful lot of money to move. I don't think the house I live in even cost that much, much less to move from it. But he paid him – it was well over the $10,000 threshold, which – had it been less than $10,000, he's in trouble anyway. But you're really in trouble if it's more than $10,000. But – I believe he was declared ineligible in high school, but was later cleared to play. He got through initial eligibility, as you said, back in May, and was cleared to play. And then after the first game, he was ruled ineligible by the NCAA. Or I shouldn't say he was ruled ineligible. Memphis was advised that he probably was ineligible due to whatever new finding. I don't know what the genesis is, and I'm not going to speculate what it may be. Somebody may have complained.
I'll speculate, David, and I think it's exactly that somebody complained, and that's why they reinvestigated it.
So they reinvestigated it, looked into whatever it was that whoever may have brought forward or what may have been discovered, and advised Memphis that he was ineligible. Generally, when the NCAA advises you that you're ineligible, you're ineligible. Now, they hasn't really declared him ineligible yet, as far as I know. But Memphis, their response, rather than sit him, which is not only what's typically done, it's what is always done. They went to court. They tried to get an injunction against the NCAA to allow him to play. They got that. The problem is that that doesn't really, like, absolve them from the wrath of the NCAA if it is later found that he is, in fact, ineligible. So it is quite a risk. And there's kind of a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, I want to kind of hit on a couple of things. Before I get to what happened in the courtroom, I've taken a little bit of a closer look at this. Now, there was, like you said, about $11,000 given by Penny. And the rule is that, you know, this ineligibility could happen if a booster gives a prospect money. And so the big questions were, obviously, Penny was not the head coach of Memphis at the time. Wiseman was not playing for Memphis at the time. But the question is, was Penny a booster giving money to a prospect? And I took a little bit of a closer look here. The NCAA defines a booster as somebody who has given money to the program for the purposes of its athletic department. And several years before this money even was exchanged, Penny had given $1 million to Memphis to build an athletic hall of fame. That makes him a booster, doesn't it?
Well, and yeah, here's the kicker, though. Once you're named a booster, You're a booster for life.
Exactly.
I bought season tickets for Xavier basketball for 7 years. I am a booster, for example. Right. That is not going to change.
The other piece to that, Chad, is that he's a former student athlete, and that could oftentimes, not always, but a lot of the times, trigger him as a booster.
Right. And now, a booster is not allowed to give money to a prospect, and a prospect is defined as anybody basically who's in the ninth grade or later.
Correct.
And he was in the 11th at the time it happened. Tytel, shouldn't he be ineligible? He could, I mean, isn't this a violation of NCAA rules? What happened?
So I only play a lawyer on TV, but it seems like a pretty clear cut thing in terms of the kid was given, or the family of the kid was given money. And I think that that is a violation. And the NCAA seems to have used strong language in its press releases so far. A couple of the points I wanted to touch on. Number one, I think it's important to have this rule in place because the hypothetical I think of is, what if I'm a booster or high school coach or whatever? What's to stop me from giving, say, $5,000 each of the top 50 recruits in the country? And if one of them ends up going to a big school and that school hires me and pays me $500,000 a year or something, it seems like a horrible, ugly legal mess and a great deal for me as the booster or high school coach. Number two, this has certainly not stopped Wiseman from producing. He was earlier tonight named the conference freshman of the week. I think in no way is this going to prevent him from going in the top five, if not number one overall, next June in the draft. And number three, I think that Memphis is playing with fire because, like you said, like they're allowed to do whatever they want. But if the NCAA finds him ineligible, then they forfeit the games. If they miss out on a tourney bid because of them, that's not like $5,000 worth of bad coverage or losses. That's like seven figures worth, I believe.
It goes beyond that, I think. When you get caught doing something wrong, it's bad. When you've been directed or instructed to not do something and you do it anyway, it is worse. I don't want to – again, one of the things that might be on the table here, a lack of institutional control, not following a directive, making an institutional decision to not do that could lead to that.
David, though, let me jump in here. I think this is where the whole court thing does play in, though. And I think one of the reasons Memphis ran to court, they didn't have to. They could have just played him. But they ran to the judge, so they have something to say, hey, we played him because a judge said we could. You know, even if you deem him ineligible, don't forfeit our wins, don't take away our money, and don't deem us at lack of institutional control.
Right. Well, the problem is there's actually language in bylaws in place for that addresses specifically that. Like if you get an injunction, it essentially isn't a get out of jail free card.
But doesn't it look a little bit better?
And it I does. Think that's yeah, it does.
That's the only reason for
better.
Them to do it because
right.
Like you said, they didn't have to do it.
Now, and here's another question, and I don't know the answer. Who made this decision? Was it Penny Hardaway? Was it Skeet? Or I'm blanking on the AD's name. Was it the AD? Was it the president? This is not a small action. Now, you can say that they did the right thing. You can say that they did the wrong thing. Did they do it knowing that they were facing down the barrel of a shotgun and just wanted to do it because they felt it was the right thing to do? Or are they doing it because they think they can get away with it? If it's the latter, I don't think they can. I mean, when you look at what happened at Louisville, I've read someone said today, well, look at how quickly Louisville bounced back. It really didn't hurt them. While that is true, it did hurt Rick Pitino. It did hurt Tom Judge, and it did hurt Andre McGee. Those people, like, while Memphis may bounce back, the individuals that were involved in defying them probably will not. Now, Anthony Hardaway will still be a millionaire, but anybody else that may have made this decision is not just gambling with their job, they're gambling with their career.
Well, let me.
Was it worth it?
Well, we have Joby Forza joining us here tonight as well. Joby, welcome, first of all. And second of all, we're discussing Wiseman, obviously.
Yeah. The show started, my camera was off.
Let me kind of throw David's question out there. You know, assuming that at the end of the day, he really is ineligible, which is kind of my gut reaction to once I've read more details, is there a reason for Memphis to do this? You know, you are putting fans in the stands. People aren't going to show up if he's not playing. Scouts aren't going to care about these games. And you probably don't have a shot at NCAA tournament.
But don't they have a full slate of, Boogie Ellis and Sarah? I mean, I don't think that they – I don't think – yes.
It's the best player in the nation if he's going to be number one.
Fewer scouts, but they still –
I would have liked their chances against UIC without them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they still have a very good class. They're still extremely competitive for a bid without him. I actually think that they should go forward without him. But, hey, they're making their call. They're going their particular route. My question, and this is, you know, where I come in, is a lot of times teams do the temporary hold. I think back to Syracuse, Louisville, a few other teams. Oh, we're going to penalize ourselves now because the NCAA can't get their act together and we know we're toast. While that is not going to happen at Memphis, they're going to try to get everything they can with this amazing recruiting class, with this amazing kind of one-and-done type situation with Weissman. Do you think the NCAA can act quick enough, have the facts quick enough, to make their decision before March when the NCAA selection committee is making their decision? Because I don't know the answer to that question.
Yes,
I think so. But
well, likewise, if I'm in Memphis shoes, I'd also be saying, well, if you were supposed to be ineligible, why didn't you tell us in May so we can at least recruit someone else to fill his scholarship spot, as opposed to conveniently finding out in late October, early November, when, let's be frank, they're up Schitt Creek without a paddle.
And that's a great point, Stalica, because I think that's Memphis's best argument here, is a procedural one. Their argument is, and simply, you knew about all this, and you said he could play. So nothing changed, and now you said he can't play. And isn't that is there some strength in that argument, Tytel?
In terms of?
Procedurally. That if there is nothing new the NCAA has now that they didn't have back in May when they cleared him, if they knew all of this, and they said, okay, we're gonna let it go here, why should the NCAA suddenly change their mind on something they already ruled on?
No, I agree with that. If there's been no change or no new evidence or anything, it makes no sense. But don't you think that means that there must be something new? Or I don't know. Is that a safe assumption?
Right. Did they know about the actual core facts? Did they know Hardaway paid for, paid X amount of dollars to make this happen, the move happen? If they knew that and they said, well, it's fine anyway, et cetera, or – they didn't know, and they'd have to be brain dead, but it is the NCAA that Hardaway is a booster. Hardaway is a booster? I didn't know he played there.
Well, I didn't know he gave $1 million 10 years ago to the school for a hope desk.
Right, look in the rafters, for goodness sakes.
Chet, well, here is – like
besides those two facts, boosters cannot give money. So either they didn't know he was a booster or they didn't know about the gift of money.
It might be a little bit different than that. Joey, let me jump in here.
I want to know what the NCAA was thinking to allow it to go forward.
I think I can explain that. When you go through the initial eligibility process with the Eligibility Center, there are questions about amateurism and whether or not you are declared an amateur. I say you, a prospective student athlete in any sport, is only based on how they answer those questions. If he answered those questions indicating that he was an amateur, the NCAA would have cleared him. If they later found that the information in those questions was incorrect, they would have changed it. I personally think that something came to their attention that they didn't know before in order for them to make that decision, because you're literally like, did you do this? Yes or no? Did you do this? Yes or no? If you answer no to everything, you're cleared. They're not going to investigate it. They're not going to look into it. This is speculation on my part. Something came about to make them think that his initial eligibility was granted incorrect.
Someone like a call from maybe Kentucky came in.
No, we don't. I don't think so.
I
don't,
Okay. But on that note, though, let's go ahead and let's turn to what's actually what happened on the court here over the first. You know, we actually had a show we did last Thursday night. We talked about some of the first couple of days, but at least over this past weekend, and as well as taking a look at things that are going to have going ahead. I'm going to be, if this worked right, pulling up our famous workbook on the screen.
The workbook.
Here. There it is.
Chad, when are you going to share this with everyone else, by the way?
A couple days. Oh, but, my God. As you can see there, these are the standings. We've been talking Memphis, so I'm going to start talking a little bit American hoops here. You can see records. You can see the net, which doesn't exist yet, but RPI under the old RPI system is there. Strength SOS is strength of schedules. The resume-based metrics are the KPI, which doesn't get released till mid-December also. ESPN's strength of resume. Joby, your J&G readers
are there. Yeah,
J&G. Right, Houston's 353 because they haven't played yet.
They haven't played game yet. The predictive ratings, the POM is the KenPOM, the BPI, the Sagarin. We've got offensive and defensive rating, tempo, poll ratings there, the AP, the coaches poll. There is no only a preseason coaches poll so far. They don't, for some reason, they don't do one the first week of the season. So we won't have new coaches poll numbers until next week. But on that note, Memphis off to a 2-0 start, but I guess Sleeka, let me start with you though. You are our Cincinnati guy, and that Ohio State Cincinnati game was one of the big games this past week, as well as I guess a couple other losses by the conference with Tulsa and South Florida losing games.
Yeah, they had even a team like Wichita State, for example, had a close call with Texas Southern, for example, on Saturday, where I don't think either team had a lead greater than 5 points for the first 38 minutes of that game before the Shockers finally began to pull away. But as far as Cincinnati goes, obviously they had their struggles offensively at Ohio State and end up rebounding tonight against Drake. But another notable result from Sunday was South Florida getting out to an early lead against Boston College, but they ended up wilting pretty badly, ended up down by 11 at halftime, and never really made any serious run to get back into that one.
Yeah, one score on that screen there is Cincinnati did pick up a win tonight over Drake, as you mentioned. Yeah. So it's a win, and they actually blew them out of the building. Titel, let me go to you here. We've got upcoming games here this week in the American, and there's a fascinating one coming up tomorrow night between Memphis and Oregon.
Yeah, the Ducks have the size, I think, to compete with Memphis, regardless of whether or not Wiseman's playing. It is actually still leaking. Do we know where that game is? I forget.
The Memphis-Oregon game is actually going to be at the Moda Center in Portland.
Yeah, I figured it was.
That is a long trip from Tennessee, so I think I'll give that to the Ducks. But Wiseman is playing like a possible number one overall pick, so if he's eligible, then he's good enough to carry a team to victory anywhere he goes.
In fact, this will actually be part of the Phil Knight Classic. It's not as extensive as the PK80 was a couple years ago, but I believe this is one of the games of a doubleheader being played in Portland that night.
All right. David, a couple other interesting games in this conference, at least. Houston hosting BYU Friday night after they get their first game in tomorrow night against Alabama State. And Sunday, UConn hosting Florida, who we'll talk a little bit Florida in a little bit here about what they did against Florida State. But, it's a home game for the Huskies.
Yeah, and it's kind of their first real test of the season. I mean, so far, most of the American has either not played or gone to the pastry cart. So it'll be interesting to see what they can do in that one. And again, I know we'll get to Florida a little bit later on, but how are they going to bounce back?
Yeah. Let's actually talk a little bit about that Florida team, actually. Joby, you're an ACC guy. Let's look at the ACC and take a look at what happened over the weekend in that Florida State game on Sunday, where Florida State went on the road and just really took it to the Gators, a Gator team we liked heading into the season.
We were pounding Florida State for their loss to Pitt, and we still should be pounding them for their loss to Pitt, given what Pitt did the next time out. I mean, it's like crazy land. Florida State has won this game repeatedly now. I think, was it three or four straight in this game? Florida State, in many years they've been the better team, but Florida has been a tournament team a lot most of those years as well. Florida State, maybe the opening jitter game was what it was, or maybe they're a little schizophrenic this year. I think it's the latter, because I'm a believer in this Gator team, and we'll talk about them later, obviously. Good for Florida State. This is a key win in a race. It's actually great for the ACC, because from an ACC perspective, you'd much rather have the loss to one of your bottom feeders and then beat a very high-quality protected seed-level team out of conference than the reverse. So this is actually a win for the ACC as much as it is Florida State.
Well, David, though, very interesting, though, that Florida State had started with the opening ACC conference loss to Pitt, who then turns around and loses a game at home to Nicholls State.
Yeah, a couple. We'll discuss that on Thursday from the Nichols standpoint, but maybe Nichols isn't bad. This is a team that took Illinois to overtime and then won it Pitt. I'm still not going to make excuses. It's a game Pitt arguably, and maybe not arguably, should have won. But I wouldn't be that. I'm a little bit less alarmed by it, if that makes any sense. That. I mean, it could be an aberration. I don't know. We still have questions about Pitt. I mean, we watched them play Florida State, and they looked pretty good in that game.
Yeah. Tytel, Virginia Tech sitting at 2-0 among the undefeateds in this conference. Have some thoughts on them?
I'm going to focus on the number 86 and their strength of schedule rankings, because that is going to be such a roller coaster in the weeks ahead. Their next 10 games are – I don't know what Uncle Buzz did before he left, but the schedule is ridiculous. So 7 of those 10 games – are against teams outside the top 200. We're talking tier 4, and some of them are pathetic, like tier 5.5 type games. The other three, there's no tier 3 or tier 2. Here's tier 1A. They got Michigan State in Hawaii. They got Duke at home, and they traveled to Charlottesville. It's a crazy schedule. There's no meat in the middle. It's all filet mignon up top and rump roast on the bottom.
Yeah. So that strength of schedule is probably going to fall down to about 286.
And Clemson's still making him look good on the strength of schedule, because Clemson's gone 2-0 outside that game, regardless of who Clemson's playing. You know, when you just have that echo effect of 2-0 in so few data points out there, that the J&G actually is Virginia Tech 12th. And don't – hey, Hokie fans, if you like that number, don't hold your breath on it.
Yeah, everything's real erratic right now. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Stalik, let me bring in here. I've got the upcoming schedule in the ACC coming up. Tomorrow night, Pittsburgh with actually a road game at Robert Morris, the lacrosse town road game there. And of course, then Pitt again on Friday with the West Virginia game. So big week for Pitt, I think, ahead.
We did allude to this about a couple weeks ago during the preview shows. The reason Pitt is actually going to Robert Morris is because UPMC Arena is actually going to be debuting for the Colonials. So a bit of a nice touch to get the hometown Panthers in there. And, yes, we will have the backyard
brawl
between West Virginia and Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't much of a brawl last year. It was more or less a pillow fight.
Joby, you see any other upsets coming in this week, though?
We'll see if Columbia can get 5 touchdowns, unlike Syracuse and James Madison.
Oh, and speaking of Columbia.
Don't miss the extra point, as the others have done. You know,
How lucky is Wake Forest not to be lumped in with Pitt this week after getting a game winner from Brandon Childress in the closing seconds?
Enjoy that week. I don't foresee you being lucky like that very often for the rest of the year.
David, let's jump over to the Big 12. Big 12 conference here. We're going to take a look what's happened here so far. A few losses by the conference. The big game being that Washington-Baylor game, one of the best games we've had so far this season.
Yeah, big win for Washington up in Alaska. I mean, you may recall last year Baylor started things off by losing to Texas Southern, losing to Washington, not quite as damaging. I mean, it's a game that you probably – Baylor feels like they could have won and maybe should have won. But overall, I think that this is a good Baylor team that's going to win a lot of big games and be top 25 caliber, maybe even protected seed-ish. I mean, they're going to be way closer to the top of the bracket than they are to the bottom of it.
And a few nice wins for this conference, though. And Oklahoma with a nice win over Minnesota. And Tytel, Texas goes in and wins a game at Purdue. Very impressive.
Indeed. A tough schedule ahead for the Longhorns, but they got to be loving it so far. And a star in the first game with 20 points, Andrew Jones. You might remember him from such diseases as leukemia. He's overcome tremendous obstacles and odds along the way. He only had 7 against Purdue, but a huge game with 4 threes in the opener against Northern Colorado. He's still contributing 3 assists against Purdue. I think he's the kind of guy that a whole team can rally around in a whole campus and university. So I would keep your eye on the Longhorns.
Right. And Joby, I'm going to pull up the upcoming schedule here in the Big 12 here in a second. You see the Oklahoma-Oregon State game. Oregon State came off of the win over Iowa State. Now they get Oklahoma tomorrow night.
Yeah, we'll see if Oregon State can be the Big 12 killer. I mean, though the Oklahoma schools have shown their grit, as well as Kansas State with UNLV. very good, solid, like, strength wins. We'll see if the conference continue. We mentioned the backyard brawl. That's going to be a lot of fun to see. William and Mary, we always, you know, William and Mary can be.
I'm not pretty much out of them this year, unfortunately. Yeah. I think it's a bit off year for Bill and Mary, but
for Bill and Mary.
I took Air Force then, TCU more than Bill and Mary.
Yeah, so the question is, Northern Colorado go 0-2 because they gave Texas they're a decent under the radar team, you know, that could give a. We'll see if West Virginia is still struggling. Yeah, you know, that could be a good measuring stick. Is, you know, if West Virginia takes care of business like they're supposed to, well, then maybe West Virginia's back. But watch Northern Colorado, West Virginia, if you're going to pick out one that, let's just watch that. And interesting that Oklahoma State's going to Charleston also.
Yeah, is that – no, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a true road game at Charleston.
Yeah. Sometimes Charleston gets a true road game if a team's in town for that Charleston Classic, but that's not for another
week. No, Oklahoma State is not in the Charleston Classic this year.
Yeah, I was realizing that even if they were, it wouldn't make any sense. Well,
David.
Yes.
David, I think the most surprising conference this year as a whole, I'm going to pull them right up on the screen here. How about the Pac-12 with only one loss the entire season and no loss, and that was in conference.
Arizona State, undefeated, basically.
Arizona
State just failing. I mean, the conference would be undefeated had it not been for them.
Had they not played another Pac-12 team, exactly.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and the vast majority of these are bye games, but Arizona taking care of Illinois and looking really good. Oregon State getting a nice win at home. Oregon blitzing everybody. Yeah, against Iowa State. UCLA looking great. Well, okay. UCLA 2-0.
UCLA was actually down at the half against UCSB. Yeah. They took a 4-point lead and Bill Walter declared the game over, and he was right.
But
Tytel, you're a Pac-12 guy. How about this conference? Is this the sudden rebound year of the Pac-12?
It was very impressive. I mean, the Utah game was ridiculous. I'm glad you circled it. but they're beating Baylor, beating Nevada. Like, these are like tournament teams who have done damage in the past. Iowa State, Illinois was supposed to be good this year. I still don't know how Arizona's doing it because they have all these freshmen. I knew about the McDonald's All-Americans like Nico Mannion and Josh Green. I didn't know Zeke Nnaji was going to come out of nowhere as a 6'11 freshman and make 18 of 23 shots from two-point range. He's been unstoppable inside. Their schedule looks okay. They don't have too much out of conference. New Mexico State next weekend, the big game. They go to Baylor on December 7th, and they host Gonzaga a week later on December 14th. But between now and then, they could be undefeated by the end of this month.
Yeah, Stalika, here's the upcoming games. We already mentioned that there's Phil Knight games tomorrow, come Tuesday night, Oregon, Memphis, Oregon State, Oklahoma. Two big games, but a few other nice-looking games in here too, including Minnesota at Utah, USC with a road trip to Nevada.
I'm just going to go out on the limb and guess that Santa Clara. That Utah is not going to win their next game by 94 like they did against Mississippi Valley State.
Real big one on Saturday, that Washington-Tennessee game. And I was really impressed. I was more impressed with Washington than I was disappointed in Baylor. I know you asked me about that a little while ago, but was Washington able to replace some of the big pieces that they missed? I think that they were. They're in the rankings, and I really like this Washington team, and if they go out there and get another one against Cincinnati, they're going to build up quite an out-of-conference resume. Or against Tennessee, excuse me.
Yeah, against Tennessee. Joby, over in the SEC.
Well, wouldn't it be impressive if they also beat Cincinnati?
Over in the SEC, it was a bad week for Alabama, not only with the home loss to Penn. Javon Quinterly gets ruling. He's not going to be able to play this season. He's going to have to redshirt.
Shocked to find gambling in this casino.
Alabama also having a rough day Saturday against LSU. Just not a good day for them. There have been happy days. Saturday was not one of them.
The rest of the conference, though, other than the Florida State game, is undefeated.
This is bye game central.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really awful set of games. I mean, I'll give Auburn over Davidson.
Michigan
State.
But let's be honest. This is, you know, this is beyond the Champions Classic and stuff. This is bye game central. We'll see. I mean, Florida should have taken care of business against Florida State. Let's be honest here. You play that game 10 times, I'm going to still stand by that Florida wins it 7 or 8, if not 9 times. But they didn't.
I know that you talked about it earlier, Joby, but did you get the sense that Florida just wasn't ready and that they will be ready from now on? I mean, I think they got hit in the mouth, and that might be the last time we see something like that.
I'm too big of a believer in this Florida team. They've got returning leadership that has shown toughness. They also came on stronger at the end of the year last year, so maybe that's how they work. Not saying it's a pattern you always want to get into, but I am not panicky over Florida. I just think it's a very good win for Florida State to right the ship. It's more let's focus on the positive of that equation than the negative, much like you were talking about Baylor-Washington.
Yeah. Well, Tytel, I know you want to do about 3 hours on the Penn-Alabama game, but how about instead take a look at the week ahead, which includes some pretty interesting games here, including the Missouri-Xavier game, LSU-VCU, and even the Gonzaga-A&M game.
Yeah, I think Gonzaga will take care of business. Yeah. I think that LSU-VCU will be the game of the week. I don't know how good Missouri is yet, but VCU seems to be good. And LSU, they lost a ton of guys from last year, but they still have enough. Skylar Mays is looking great. Emmett Williams. We mentioned, I see down there, Alabama goes to Rhode Island next Friday. Their non-conference schedule outside of Penn is pretty darn good. They got a bunch of top 100 teams in non-conference play. Rhode Island, Furman, Carolina in the battle for Atlantis, Penn State, Belmont, Richmond, a lot of like mid-major teams, but a lot of good mid-major teams, which is why if we look at Alabama's strength of schedule, 263, it is going to go up and up and up.
Yeah, very little data to base the strength of schedule numbers on so far, so it's hard. You got to take them out of the real grain of salt.
And we love the workbook. Chad, did I mention that we love the workbook? We'd like to get the workbook. But if you're watching this, a lot of these numbers here are erratic. They're interesting, but they're hardly indicative of how good or bad anyone.
I got to tell you honestly, Dave, one of the numbers I look at the most early in the season is something like a KenPom, which is a predictive metric, which I think gives you a lot better idea of how good, at least by the – on the paper, these teams should be this season. As we get further in the season, the resume-based metrics will look a lot better.
Right. What about the David Griggs merit ratings? Those are posted today.
That absolutely has no merit whatsoever. Let's go. I've been stalling a little bit on talking about it, but now as we record this, the game of the night here, David, DePaul is currently with about a little under 6 minutes left, has an 84-62 lead in Iowa City over the Hawkeyes and one of the most stunning games I've seen in quite a while.
DePaul 3-0, and I realize that they kind of went to the pastry cart, but looking better tonight than they have in what year is it? Probably since
make it 4-0. It's
Mark
about to happen.
McGuire was roaming the hard court.
Right. You know, Dave Latteo, they did make some NCAA tournaments in the early aughts, but it's been about a decade and a half since they've looked anything like this, and it's kind of it's almost I can't stop watching even though the game is long since over.
Since Dave Lato 1.0.
yeah.
Let's not forget Dave Lato actually is returning from a 3-game coaching suspension because of shenanigans during the offseason.
So he missed Alcorn State, Chicago, and Fairleigh Dickinson. I can't believe they won those three.
And Chad, if we could, another feature of this wonderful workbook, can we pull up the schedule?
Sure. I'll pull DePaul's schedule here, not Memphis or North Carolina. Let's go to little DePaul here on the left-hand side.
On the left-hand side there.
Coming up here in a second. There it is. After tonight's game at Iowa, Cornell,
You go down the list. I mean, they got a big
Minnesota, Texas Tech. Those are good games.
Yeah, these are winnable games, but they're winnable games that could get them quite a bit of cred. And I know that you should never overreact to just one game, and I think sometimes early in November we have a tendency to do that. But how do you not – I mean, they are dump-trucking Iowa right now.
Dump-trucking Iowa.
Iowa win, you combine it with, if you're able to get a Minnesota, a Northwestern they should get, but you lose to Texas Tech. Big freaking deal. No, everybody loses to Texas Tech in a lot of ways. So it's like – you come out of the conference, a non-conference, you beat BC, you know, you come out of it and people go, well, it wasn't the best coach, but they whipped Iowa on the road. That's great. They go, hey, it's a conference, they're in. I mean, period. You know, I mean.
Yeah, we've got here, this is Gavitt game week. This DePaul, Iowa game is game one of the Gavitt games here. I'm kind of trying to highlight some of the other Gavitt games. But Tytel, tomorrow night, Tuesday, we've got Minnesota Butler and Creighton Michigan in the Gavitt games. We already mentioned the Missouri Xavier game, not a Gavitt game. Wednesday, Providence Northwestern, Purdue Marquette, Villanova Ohio State. Thursday, we've got Penn State, Georgetown, and Michigan State Seton Hall. So heck of a week for the Big East ahead with these games.
Amazing week. I will be actually at the Penn State Georgetown game as a fan, thanks to my good friend Sam taking care of me as an early birthday gift. I got to see Georgetown in person on Saturday. Omar Yurtseven looks like an All-American. All he does is average double-doubles in like 20, 25 minutes of game action. Obviously, Penn State is a step up in competition. The other one, the fun one there is Purdue at Marquette. If you haven't seen Marcus Howard this year, you've missed a lot. He's averaging like 40 points a game. yeah. Purdue has Matt Harm, so he's not going to do anything inside. So they better guard him outside. Otherwise, he's going to rain down threes. I wish our Marquette fan was here on the broadcast to speak even more about Marcus Howard.
Michigan State Seton Hall, a huge one. And David, looking ahead for the weekend, Marquette, Wisconsin coming up on Sunday as well. There's a lot of big games in the Big East here.
Yeah, and the temperature of that rivalry is pretty hot. And you kind of wonder, is this kind of early? Because normally it was that first or second weekend in December when these two play. A real early matchup this year for some reason. I don't know why. I wish Matt was here to tell us why. But.
Joby, who do you think wins the series with the Big East about to go up 1-0?
Eight games total. That's a big first blow. It's kind of like, the scene in Rounders where Matt Damon takes the stack from Malkovich, that's a pretty big statement to come out. I think, though, that the Big Ten is just really deep and good. Big East is a good conference, but I just love the depth of the Big Ten. I think it's going to come to the fore. I mean, I think Michigan State goes on the road and beats Seton Hall. Thus, that takes one of those road games back.
Joby, you are aware that Northwestern and Nebraska are Big Ten teams.
We're about to get there, too.
Well, thankfully for the Big Ten, Nebraska is not part of the series. Yeah, Northwestern hosting Providence. That's going to be roadkill for the Big East.
Yeah. I'm aware that St. John's is a Big East member because I think Vermont comes in and might kick their ass. So
I highlighted that game as well. And that kind of pay a little attention to that game coming on Saturday. Vermont, St. John's could be a upset there in terms of the power conference versus non-power conference. But Joby, you talk about how good the Big Ten is, but there is a red is losses in non-conference games, and there's a lot of red on the screen here as we go over to the Big.
Hey, Merrimack's tough, man.
Merrimack, UC Riverside, Southern Utah. What the hell?
UC Riverside.
This is the ghost of Tim Miles.
Yes. Oh. Now, what do you think of him now? I told you that he would. Since getting rid of Tim Miles, I bet that Nebraska doesn't win it all in the next 5 years. That's my prediction.
Well, they've lost like the close games that you look and you thought they had in their grasp, like in St. Mary's, Wisconsin last week, Purdue, Texas being the most recent one. I'm still – the losers in each of those cases I still have belief in. I'm not going to overreact. I still think the Big Ten is going to produce a ton of a ton of tournament teams this year. Even last week, Illinois goes out and, in the battle of teams that shouldn't be losing your first game, since Illinois barely beat Nicholls, they go out and beat Grand Canyon on the road pretty soon.
They win a game on the road against a team that lost at home to a non-D1 team in its opening day.
But let's face it,
Nicholls took them overtime. They got beaten by Arizona. I don't have any faith this Illinois team anymore from what I saw.
But the point of the matter is I think this is a good, strong conference. Your Rutgers team, Bryant went out and won their next game, so maybe that wasn't.
Well, Rutgers, their biggest margin of victory in about 45 years with that 86-39 thresh of Niagara. But, did you agree with Joby that this is actually a good conference? Because I don't think I've seen it so far this season.
I mean, some would say if Rutgers is your fifth best team, then it's not. But I got to give your Scarlet Knights a little love. 2-0, obviously beating Bryant by 2 points is not exactly the recipe for – attorney bid. Destroying Niagara certainly helped. 5 games left this month. They're all against teams outside the top 100. There are not any road games in the United States. There's 4 at home in Piscataway, and the neutral site game against the Bonnies is in Toronto. They do have a little step up in competition in December when they get at Pittsburgh, at Michigan State, and host Wisconsin, and host Seton Hall. So that's going to be quite a stretch. But the chance that Rutgers could be 7-0 to end this month, you got to be happy about that.
Absolutely.
I have to ask, though, who's going to have the bigger crowd? Rutgers for their home opener against, who was it? Bryant or Rutgers football, their home game against Liberty?
Oh, that was a good question.
Stalica, the upcoming schedule, we already talked about the Gavitt games, but anything else in here? There's a few others that we're mentioning, maybe the Minnesota-Utah game, for example. Rutgers-Bonnies, we already mentioned.
Yeah, we did mention that in passing, and I'm also looking at a team like Maryland who's not in the Gavitt games, but instead they get a bye game against Oakland, but not much to see there. And then forget it.
Well, Marquette, Wisconsin.
Illinois, a tough home test against Hawaii, I guess. I don't know. let's run through a couple of the conferences real quick. David, starting over in the Atlantic 10, VCU impressed by them so far or not impressed by them?
Sort of neither. I mean, they're kind of what we expected. You really can't draw too much out of what they've done. I mean, they've played 2 winnable games and they've won them. So, but I will say this, like last year, especially in the first week, this conference lost a lot of bye games or games that they were the ones that were paying out the money. For the most part, this year they've won the games that you would expect them to win. So I know that they've been basically beating up on the pastry carts, but at least they're kind of taking care of business. Davidson, the loss to Auburn wasn't that bad. I mean, after watching them in their exhibition game, and I know it was an exhibition game, I was becoming concerned that Davidson couldn't defend anything. Like, it looked like their defensive strategy was leave them open, hope they miss, and then maybe try and get the rebound, just so long as you don't get in anybody's way. But it was much, much better against Auburn. And while they didn't win the game, I came away thinking that Davidson is a little bit better than maybe they're as good as everybody kind of thought they were coming into the year. Again, Dayton, a team that I'm big on, hasn't played anything but a bye game. Duquesne, another team that I kind of like, hasn't played anything but a bye game. So my impressions of this conference are that they're winning the games they're supposed to win, but I'm not really blown away by that.
In the case of Dayton, they barely got by because that was down to a 1-possession game in the closing seconds.
I knew it was close with a
few. It was the closing seconds because the Trees actually had 2 chances to hit a game-time 3, but came up short, and then the Flyers finished it up at the foul line.
Okay.
All right. Upcoming schedule in the A-10, Joby, real quick, is there anything that you're looking at this week here? I mean, I guess we already mentioned the LSU-VCU.
LSU-VCU is obviously the big one. But,
right.
Yeah, let's see.
I guess you got a couple of big 5 games here, too.
Ironically, you know, on the other side of the coin. But for the most part, you know, that's nothing really pops, to be honest. UNC Williamson-Davidson's an in-state game, but UNC Wilmington is not the same as they were 3 years ago when Keats was running the sidelines. So Davidson should – let's see if Davidson has struggles there, then the, is this a tournament team or not, that might tell us a lot.
Well, Tytel, a couple of big 5 games here, though. We got the LaSalle Penn game and we got Temple LaSalle.
Yes, I want to focus on the one I can't believe I'm not talking about the Penn game, but Seton Hall at St. Louis. Talk about winning the games you're supposed to win. That is not a game St. Louis should win normally. With the injury to Miles Powell, I think he's going to be out for that game, and it's in St. Louis. That game is ripe for St. Louis to steal, which will look great on their resume in several months.
And keep in mind, St. Louis already stole a game at Seton Hall last year, albeit with a completely different roster. Mm-hmm.
Stalica, let me stick with you. A quick look over at the West Coast Conference, in which Gonzaga, St. Mary's, both off to undefeated starts so far. I guess BYU did suffer the loss to San Diego State, though, so we should discuss that one a little bit.
Yeah, that would be the toe stub for the conference here, because BYU's loss is actually going to be San Diego State's game, because the Aztecs had been they've kind of fallen off the pace a little bit the past few years, but BYU is another team that we did have some expectations for, whether or not that means actually getting into the NCAA tournament or finishing around the NIT like they did last year.
And David, upcoming this week for this conference, which is a conference where you got to make your noise, make some noise out of conference. We already mentioned right. Gonzaga on the road, albeit at A&M. But I mean, what else is going on here? BYU's got Southern Utah, and then trip to Houston, I guess.
BYU at Houston. But other than that, nothing really exciting. Other than some opportunities to kind of rack up some road wins. You know, if San Fran, who's winning tonight, and I think they're going to hold on to beat Yale, goes on the road and beats Southern Illinois, and then suddenly they're 4-0 with a road win like that. I mean, it's sort of building it up slowly. It isn't exploding onto the scene, but these are, like you said, like it's important that these teams win out of conference, and I think that these are a lot of winnable games. I think Santa Clara can get Wazoo. I think San Diego can get Fresno State. I mean, the conference could set itself up like it did a year ago to have about three or four teams that look pretty good.
Yeah, keep an eye on that game tomorrow night. Washington State at Santa Clara could be a sneaky good game, actually. Mountain West Conference, Titel. Let's take a quick look there. We already mentioned San Diego State's
big win
over BYU. But, you know, Utah State, not very impressive over Montana State, I think, on opening night. But they crushed Weber in their second game, at least.
Yes, I think the X factor for Utah State is the injury to Nemeas Queta, who might have been a first-round pick had he chosen to leave last year. 6'11", Conference Rookie of the Year. When healthy, I think they can not run this conference. Also, do not count out Nevada. Obviously, like, a loss is a loss, but I think it was to Utah.
Utah at home,
beating people by hundreds of points, so to lose by five is certainly respectable. And the fact that they keep reloading, even though they have a new coach, it's a lot of change this year in Reno, but I think they're going to end up okay.
All right, and Slika, the K-State, UNLV gave K-State a game, as you circled there.
Yeah, I highlight that one because this was a bit of a missed opportunity for the Mountain West. UNLV actually, I think, had a couple kind whistles towards the end of regulation, but they were unable to get the game-winning shot off in regulation, so this game goes overtime, and the Wildcats ended up outlasting the Rebels here.
Right, and real quick look at the upcoming schedule of the Mountain West. Joby, we've got a Service Academy game here tomorrow night. Air Force.
Yeah, Air Force. Army. Oh, that's cool. It's always fun. Grand Canyon, San Diego State, baby. Team of people. Former.
Former. Perhaps the best one we ever had.
Yeah, we didn't address it enough, but USC, Nevada should be a lot of fun. I know the Martins aren't there anymore, but
yeah.
USC going on the road, and there was a lot of talk whether this USC team, a lot of people, whether it's, you know, your Lenardis types, have them as their first four in line. They're a chic pick right now. Going to Nevada, who is still a solid team, will definitely show if it'll show you something about USC's tournament projections.
I guess we got just quick high UNLV, who Slico previously mentioned, at Cal and at UCLA, so a little bit of a tough
one.
San Jose State, who I know we mentioned last week, getting the big win at Hofstra to open the year, following that up with a loss. So maybe that – I was really excited there for a second.
A loss to Portland at home.
A home loss to Portland, yeah.
Yes, not their best moment.
I guess on that note, let's go ahead and pull down the pull down the scores here and go back and I guess we'll go through each of you here. Any other final thoughts on – what we've seen the first week, what's coming ahead the next week? Slika, let me start with you.
I feel like this is something that one of our friends, Matt Sarniak, would be discussing, but the Pac-12 network, they actually have one of their key executives leading the network, and she was actually in charge of media distribution. So in other words, what this means is one of the people that was in charge of trying to get them onto TV networks like DirecTV, Comcast, and the like, she's actually resigning. I think one of the longer-term pictures we have to look at for the Pac-12 is this network even going to exist in its current form? Are they going to have to possibly align themselves with either an ESPN or a Fox like the Big Ten, the ACC, and now the ACC networks have done? There are going to be a lot of long-term questions for the league as well as their network.
Yeah, good point, John.
Titel.
So I just wanted to extend our condolences to Cassius Winston.
Yes.
You got the senior point guard out of Michigan State, preseason All-American, a favorite in many people's minds for National Player of the Year. He had one of the worst weeks of his life last week. He lost to Kentucky in the Champions Classic on Tuesday. Saturday, he learned that his brother Zachary died after getting hit by a train. Obviously, the latter much more important than the former. Somehow, he's able to get back on the court Sunday night. I don't know how. 17 points and 11 assists in a 53-point win over Binghamton. On the court, I don't know if he's going to miss the next game at Seton Hall on Thursday because of the funeral. I have no idea if they schedule it or if he's going. I don't know how a human being is able to have it either emotionally or mentally or physically to get back on the court. I've heard stories like in the past with guys overcoming tragedy, like that's their safe space or that's their normal thing that they, it makes them feel okay because that's what they do all the time. I don't know how he does it, but I certainly wish him the best of luck. And I hope that the Winston family can try to heal from this horrible tragedy.
But there was also a nice tribute from Michigan State as well, because I think Tom Izzo and assistant coach Dwayne Stevens were decked out in Albion colors. They also had some of the, what is it, their streamers and their colors in the student section as well.
Yeah, but I've definitely got to echo our thoughts out to the family there. Joby, let me head over to you. And I know you were not with us for our show where we gave our Final Four national champion predictions. And so I also, along with your final thought, I wanted, we haven't heard yours yet, so I wanted to
Yeah, and I'm not going to change them, even though they, mine looked not as good a weekend. I decided to go not the traditional, not name every team in the Champions Classic, which would be the should be the cop out. But I do like Michigan State still, and it's even without even with Langford looking out longer term, I'm still going to stick by him. And Winston's the reason, and it's sad. You know what Titel mentioned is very sad, but I think he is, you know, by all accounts, a strong individual, and. I bet you he dedicates the year to his brother, and you know it could be a pretty emotional, but inspiring run. And Michigan State's still on the list. The other three are a little off the radar, but from what I understand from Chad, is everybody had at least one of them, which is crazy. I like Florida. Yes, in the wake of Florida State game, I still like Florida. I think they have the senior leadership, or at least the experience to be able to make the run. I'm a sucker for teams with good point guards and great inside play. Oregon wins the Pac-12, which is much better this year, and is the big shocker to making the run. And then Louisville has looked great. I'm sticking with Louisville. I picked them as my ACC preseason pick. I'm going to stick with that. And I think Louisville makes a lot of sense going forward, and they haven't disappointed so far. My national champion would be Michigan State. But against over Louisville in the championship game, assuming the brackets were to work out that way. And there you go. So I know Michigan State's a real creative pick to win it all, but, you know, hey.
David, you want to finish us off?
Yeah. You know, real quick, just to follow up, one of the fun things about for me every season is that it's fun to see teams that typically aren't historically good, but, you know, bust onto the scene and have big years. DePaul just finished off Iowa. I'm all for them. I'd like to see them have a big year. Something else, I want to give another shout out to our good friend Warren Nolan. He's got a couple features on his site already. He still sorts by RPI, but a lot of good information on here. He's got the RPI sorted by team sheets here. This is warrennolan.com.
He's going to have the net up there as soon as it comes out as well.
Yeah, and he will have the net up there as soon as it comes out. And another thing, like if you need a good like Warren is the place to go.
Besides chairs and everything.
Warren's getting sponsored.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Just a quick note. We are recording this around 10. We just finished right around 10 o'clock Eastern right now here Monday evening. We did not discuss much about St. Mary's. They are trailing at halftime as we record this, but we'll keep an eye on that. But I do want to thank everyone for joining us. On behalf of John Titel, John Stalica, Joby Fortson, and David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwood, and we'll be back again later this week with an Under the Radar podcast and another Hoops HD report next Monday. Have a great night, everybody.